The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Andrea Kay Show. She's blonde, 5'2", and 102 pounds of dynamite in a dress. Here she is, Andrea Kay.
Welcome to hour two of tonight's Andrea Kay Show on this Friday Eve. That music was giving me like some 60s beach, you know, dancing on the beach, surfer vibes, right? Remember those 60s? I was never really a fan of them. The old Annette Funicello thing and, you know, the reruns of, was it Skipper? Sally Field played a surfer, Gidget. Okay. That was never anything I was interested in, but the music is kind of cool. Glad to have y'all here with me last hour. If you missed it, we talked a lot about the legacy that is the O.J. Simpson trial. There's lots of great memes going out there today. One of my favorites is, yeah, it's a dry heat, OJ. It's a dry heat. All right. We also had Bob Walters on a special night. If you missed any of that, download the podcast wherever you get your pods. And this hour, we are going to be talking about a important hearing that took place today in Congress, and it involved the suppression and propaganda in the media, to where the handful of journalists that we have left, investigative reporters, have been fired, pushed out, subject to tyranny on the part of the government. And there was a hearing about that today. And we have a couple clips from Catherine Herridge to share with you guys about that. And speaking of control the message and you control minds, right? So we've got a first-time guest on the Andrea Kay Show coming up this hour named Brian Hamacek, who's got a book out called Dissidently Speaking. And boy, do they want to keep us dissidents quiet. So I'm looking forward to having him on. I look forward to chatting with this guy every night of the week here on the Andrea Kay Show. It is DJ Sesame Broccolini.
I'm as mad as I'm not going to take this anymore.
Oh, wow. I just can't believe it's already Thursday. My goodness. Yeah, what a week. And that was a really good first hour. Seriously, if you guys missed it, please download the pods, because that was a really, really good first hour. It's interesting to sort of look at what's going on right now with the current political landscape, the criminal justice system, the weaponization of the DOJ, meddling from intel communities, and of course, the role of the media. The role of the media in all of it, and stoking that hatred and covering up and carrying water for people and manufacturing issues and trying to paint someone who was clearly a guilty man as some innocent man who's what, the victim of a broken criminal justice system that allows white people to get away with murder? No, complete lie.
The left has been, people weren't really connecting the dots though between the OJ trial and reparations. In fact, many people weren't even connecting the dots between today's crime wave and Nobel policies with that being a form of reparations. I think I'm one of the few people I've heard mention that. It was so blatant that Obama was wanting to use the Department of Injustice and our courts and our media to divide and foment racial hatred. And one of the first things he did as president was he made a false accusation against a white cop in Boston and falsely accused him of racism. And then there was the beer summit. I was angry at that cop. I would have told Barack Obama to sit on an unopened bottle of Corona and rotate on it, although he might enjoy that a little too much. Yeah, I said it. there's no way I would have had a beer with that man. Then it was, if I had a son, he would look like Trayvon. And the media at the time, it was NBC, I believe, who falsified, edited the recording of George Zimmerman calling in order to specifically make him look racist. So we're going to continue And it's all tied together. It's even tied to Catherine Herridge, even though Catherine Herridge was not fired by CBS for reporting on reporting on anything related to Trayvon Martin or OJ or any of that. But she was fired for reporting on corruption in the government. At least that seems to be the obvious case. Cheryl Atkinson was fired from CBS as well. And she actually, and both of them have been embroiled in expensive lawsuits in the course of legacy media, seeking to suppress them, to stop their reporting. Cheryl Atkinson posted a video that I watched and many people watched, and I encourage you to see it, where she's sitting there with her laptop, and in real time, you can see her evidence from her laptop being deleted. So this goes in line with what we were talking about last hour and last night and other nights, that, you know, the one issue voters, conservatives right now that are angry at Trump over abortion or whatever. Look, you know, we are all going to be Catherine Herridge. We are right now, last hour, the media today and the people openly, high profile people saying OJ murdered two people. And it was okay that he murdered two people because they were white and our justice system is racist. And this pays back for Rodney King and pays back for a racist system. That should scare you going forward with the climate we've got going on in this country. So one of the reasons why, getting back to Catherine Herridge and Cheryl Atkinson, one of the reasons why they were there in front of Congress today was something called the Press Act, which isn't going to do anything to stop the propagandist outlets from pushing lies. It's not going to do anything. But I do want you to hear from Catherine Herridge. I've got two clips that I pulled from her. Her opening statement was about 6 minutes. Sesame, if you could play the second clip in the stack.
When I was laid off in February, an incident reinforced in my mind the importance of protecting confidential sources. CBS News locked me out of the building and seized hundreds of pages of my reporting files, including confidential source information. Multiple sources said they were concerned that by working with me to expose government corruption and misconduct, they would be identified and exposed. I pushed back, and with the public support of my union, SAG-AFTRA, the records were returned. CBS's News' decision to seize my reporting records crossed a red line that I believe should never be crossed again by any media organization in the future.
She went on to describe it as journalistic rape, which it was. But CBS will get away with it, which is why this press act means nothing to me. They got away with doing the same thing to Cheryl Atkinson before. And the persecution of what is supposed to be reporters who are part of what our founders believed was a critical checks and balance on the system, to see them persecuted. The yammering from these people, like, you know, alleged Republican conservative Tom McClintock. I'll get into that a little bit later in his Q&A with Cheryl Atkinson. But there's absolutely nothing these Republicans are going to do to stop this, nor will the press act. And in this next clip of Catherine Herridge, it's about, and by the way, before I play this next act, one more comment I want to make about this red line is this red line is going to continue to be crossed all day, every day. It's already been crossed. This is the same outlet that deleted, as I said, that worked with the government to delete Cheryl Atkinson's. If they can delete her documents in real time on her laptop, they can lock any reporter out that they want and seize their records. And as for the sources, that's exactly what this was meant to do. It was meant to chill anybody who might be working with a reporter by basically saying, we're going to make sure there's no such thing as confidential sources. Before I move on to the next clip, anything you want to add to the discussion, Sesame?
Well, this is a very, very scary sort of new reality, but I do think you make a really important point here. I mean, we can talk about legislation and accountability, but the truth is these organizations, they keep getting away with it. They pull every dirty trick in the book and do stuff that is certainly anti-American and antithetical to the whole freedom of the press and what it really serves. There is a telos for that, you know, the freedom of the press. It's very, very important. The founders did not just acknowledge that right in the Constitution arbitrarily. And these companies, what they notice is, or I guess what really matters to them is power. They keep getting away with it, and until someone physically stops them, or until they feel the pain in some way or form, I mean, they're going to keep getting away with it. This is really unfortunate, but I imagine it will happen again and again.
Yes.
And again and again,
right,
until we eventually demand more or boycott them or get involved, or I don't know how, but until there's – until we actually hold their feet to the fire. None of this stuff without teeth. Because a slap on the wrist is not going to do anything to really.
And there's another law. I mean, right, Joe Biden just this week said, you know what? So the Supreme Court ruled that it's unconstitutional for me to take money from taxpayers and buy votes with it. And he said, and they laughed about it. So what's the PASS Act going to do? I mean, it's crap. Mm-hmm. It's such theater.
It's performative.
I'm so sick of the theatrics. It's totally performative.
It makes people think something is being done when really nothing's going to change. It's still the status
American.
Quo.
And if you're an American out there that trusts this government at this point to do anything to protect any American or to hold anybody accountable, we've right now got the legacy media and the White House clearly glad that O.J. Simpson got away with murder. Are you kidding me? CBS isn't going to be held to any account. And Catherine Herridge and her family live in fear. Here's a clip in which she describes the persecution being laid out on her and the fear that it is impugning on her family. Sesame, if you can play the clip.
In February, I was held in contempt of court for refusing to disclose my confidential sources on a national security story. I think my current situation can help put the importance of the Press Act into context. One of our children recently asked me if I would go to jail, if we would lose our house, and if we would lose our family savings to protect my reporting sources. I wanted to answer that in this United States, where we say we value democracy and the role of a vibrant and free press, that it was impossible, but I could not offer that assurance.
Wow. Wow. We're North Korea. We're Castro's Cuba. This is where we're at. And we've only got one man who's running, who's at least got an interest in stopping it. Because until there's perp walks. And this woman, by the way, is facing an $800 a day fine. $800 a day. While Hunter Biden hasn't spent a day behind bars, and the corrupt Biden crime family is still making bank off of the graft. Look at all the millions all of them are making. And look at what this Department of Injustice and this weaponized government is doing to silence the truth, to keep the truth. This is about covering up the crimes. The purpose of the free press was to expose, to investigate, and report to the American people so that we can make an educated decision as to our votes. Because this is supposed to be a representative government. It's actually not supposed to be a democracy. It's a republic of states. And the people are supposed to represent us. And the power is supposed to be ours. And this is about denying us the power. We got to, and she's talking about putting the Press Act into context. And, you know, she's not going to say you guys are a bunch of dopes and your Press Act isn't going to do anything to protect anything. She's not going to say that. She's wanting her voice to be heard. But something has to be done. All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. We've got a special guest, first time on the Andrea Kaye Show, who's got a book called Dissidently Speaking. His name is Brian Hamacek. And we're all dissidents now. Anybody that opposes the regime, and we're going to talk to him about this when we return.
Andrea Kaye, bringing the world a much-needed reality check. You're listening to The Andrea Kaye Show on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome back to tonight's Andrea Kaye Show. Before the break, we were talking about the hearing that took place today with noted, esteemed, respected, real journalist Cheryl Atkinson, as well as Catherine Herridge, and their experiences with being silenced and suppressed and fired and tormented and persecuted by a government that's trying to keep the truth away from the American people. And that we were talking about that, not just in and of itself, but also in the context of the OJ story and what we talked about last hour, and about how the use of control the message and you control minds and you control the outcome of elections. And it's also just a key part of the cultural Marxist movement meant to divide us and foment hatred between us. And so I'm super excited that in the light of all these discussions we've had tonight, we've got a guest on, first time on the Andrea Kay Show. His name is Brent Hamacek, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. And he's got a book called Dissidently Speaking, Change the Words, Change the War. And he joins me now. Thanks for being here tonight.
It is a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. And interesting news day. It certainly was.
Yeah. You know, it's not lost on me and hopefully many, many others that the OJ trial wasn't just about getting OJ to run off scot-free for the murders of two Americans, but it was also a critical moment for the left to foster division and reparations as part of the cultural Marxist movement of, you know, racism and equity in this country. And by doing that, I mean, they've gained so much power by making us scared to use our own words, right? If you wanted to secure the border, you hated brown people and you were a racist. If you want, you know, women to pay for their own health care, you hate women. They're such masters of creating false narratives, masters of word games, Brent. Like Obamacare was called the Affordable Care Act when it bankrupted everybody and raised, the premiums and the deductibles. They get away with calling abortion health care, right? Do you in your book help people to counter all these false narratives? Because we really need some help in this country if we're going to take this country back in communicating with other Americans.
Well, I'd like to think that I do. Certainly one of the points that's made in the book is that for people who believe in individual liberty and free markets and the kinds of things that our founding fathers tried to give us an opportunity to embrace, one of the things that's important for those folks is to take back language. I just spent 2 days at a conference in Philadelphia, put together of sort of what we could call conservative think tanks, trying to find ways to come together. And it was very interesting because it was a working meeting and we worked in groups. And one of the things when groups reported back, they would say, well, we'd like to talk about free will, but free will has a bad connotation now. Mm-hmm. One of the points I made during the program was, folks, we're running out of words. And we can't keep looking for the few words that are left. We need to take back some of the ones that we've lost. But I'd like to also think that in the book, not only do I make the point about the need to address the language issue, but I think that there's a need to address everything about how we view our paradigms. I think that we're looking at everything wrong, or at least not looking at it enough. We're taking too much for granted. And what I mean by that is we're looking at relationships between groups in our society the wrong way. We're looking at our engagements with other individuals the same way or the wrong way. And we are looking at our engagements with ourselves the wrong way. And what I mean by that in particular is this notion of ethics. So Americans have a lot to revisit. We've been taking a lot for granted in terms of what's going on. We've been very quick to identify people that don't agree with us as enemies instead of people that don't agree with us. And we need to do better. And that's what the purpose of this book is. It's to get people to think.
Well, people are entrenched in their positions. And so much so that, for example, one of the things we've talked about this week is that there's a lot of conservatives and pro-life conservatives that are so angry that Trump, you know, said that he believes in he is pro-life, with the only exceptions being rape, incest, and the life of the mother. And there's conservatives that are and pro-life people that are saying they're just not going to vote for him because it's just not as 100% a pure pro-life position as they want. And that's and you try having a conversation with them. And, you know, they even if you no matter how pro-life you are and, you know, they're going to accuse you of, you know, being as much a baby killer as the left. And then on the left, you know, if you say that you want that abortion is murder, then you're nobody's allowed to have an opinion that's different. And it's on both sides, often cases.
That particular paradigm with regard to abortion is actually discussed in the book. So interesting, by the way, as I've had opportunities to speak with people like yourself who are kind enough to have me on their show. Sometimes we're talking about topics in the news, and I'm always struck by the fact that in this book, which is a book of ideas, it is a book about getting people to think about things. I'm struck by just how much ground that actually was covered in it. But look, this quest for purity that we have is something that has arisen because the American people, by the way, both sides of what we would call, what I call team right and team left, both sides have become absolutely addicted to confrontation. They crave it like I used to crave a glass of bourbon. And it makes no difference if you're a Trump supporter or a non-supporter, Christian or atheist. We're craving, we're neuropathing for conflict. And so this quest for purity, somebody can love 50 things about Donald Trump out of 51. And then he says, but I think states ought to decide. And I think, you know, no exception goes too far. And all of a sudden, I won't vote for him and I hate him. Why? Well, if you agree with him on 50 out of 51, but not on one, and then you say won't vote for him, I would suggest to you that you are then looking for a reason to hate. That's all you're doing. Mm-hmm. That's all you're doing. You're looking for a reason to hate. You're craving it. And then you found one. And you're going to jump on it. And that's what the American people are doing.
Yeah, we're talking to Brent Hamacek about his book, Dissidently Speaking. So so what's the solution for this? I will say that there are some things that are absolute for me. There is such a thing as right and wrong. The mutilation of children, putting them on puberty blockers, the complete denial of common sense, rational thought and reasoning to suggest that you can just pick and choose your gender. I don't want to send the message that I think that that everything is negotiable, because I do think that there is some right and wrong. And I feel like people are digging their heels in because everything has become negotiable because people just get to dig their heels in over feelings versus facts.
Well, I'm smiling as I'm talking to you over the phone because all of what you just said is addressed in a good deal of depth inside of this book. It is too complex to pull apart in a handful of minutes, but a couple of thoughts. One of the things we have to do a better job of as all individuals is we have to distinguish between what we call principles and what are simply preferences. In America today, we are very quick to say anything that we would prefer to be the case is a matter of principle. No, it's not. Not really. It's just your preference. But if you call it a matter of principle, you don't have to talk about it. And so people have lots of principles, it seems, don't they? Which is an interesting thing in and of itself, given our behavior. The other thing to keep in mind is that, of course, there are absolutes. I am an objectivist by ethics and passion, so we believe very much in absolutes. On the other hand, how many absolutes are there truly? And now we're back to principles versus preferences. And so it's that Latin concept of malum in se and malum prohibitum, something evil in and of itself, like molesting a small child, or something evil just because it's prohibited, like running through a stop sign in an empty country road. Mm-hmm. And so we need to do a better job as people, as individuals, of saying, what actually are my principles? And what is it just something I'd prefer to be the case? And when I'm talking about things that are evil, we just need to stop for a minute and say, are they? The final big thought on all this from my perspective, here's what I'm trying to do with the book. All I'm trying to do is flip two words in the English language. I want people to stop saying it is all the time. And I want them to start asking, is it, of themselves and to others? Because if we could flip those two words in the English language, we could change the entire world. We spend an awful lot of time nowadays running around and telling people what things are. But we don't spend enough time asking them questions. And we don't spend enough time asking ourselves questions. We take too much for granted. We are overwhelmed with our own brilliance and knowledge. and we're not willing to look introspectively and say, are we really what we think we are? And I think we need to do more of that, and we can do better.
Well, I am just fascinated by this book and our conversation. And I hope that we'll have you back so that we can continue, because this is a complex issue and there's a lot of human nature involved, a lot of psychology, which is always something that's interested in me, going back to my corporate sales days. Well, I was a political philosophy major, and then I got into corporate sales, and you got to understand a lot of psychology so you can crawl around in somebody's head and make them buy something they don't want or need. So
similar professional backgrounds, by the way.
Yes. So I'll have to have you back and tell everybody quickly, though, how they can get the book.
You can go to dissidentlyspeaking.com. It'll take you through to the web, to the Amazon page. It is available in hardcover, softcover, and digital, and it will be available in audio any day as soon as Amazon finishes its artificial intelligence vetting process. But we're close.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being here. I appreciate it. Great discussion.
It was a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, you guys, stick around. We got more coming up on the other side of the break. What food are you buying that's not actually what you think you're buying? We got to talk about that when we come back.
Andrea Kay, telling you like it is, while eating a donut, too. It's the Andrea Kay Show on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome back to tonight's Andrea Kay Show. What a fascinating conversation with Brent Hamacek from the book, who wrote the book Dissidently Speaking. I love words. I love communication. I spent a lot of years in sales. Obviously, I sit and rap with y'all every night here because I love to communicate. Words are so powerful. It's one of the reasons why I don't like when people throw really nasty words around in arguments and then later on say, well, it's just words. No, it's not. Words are absolutely powerful. It's one of the reasons why I love music. And we have just completely lost the ability to communicate with each other. And it's part of the reason why, major reason why America is in such dire straits. And why the left can justify. And I want to follow up and for a moment on that before we get into this next topic. I should have maybe carried him over to another segment. I don't want to, if you guys missed it, download the podcast wherever you get your pods. I do think that there's a lot of people on both sides who are virtue signaling. They put a line in the sand. He's right that they're just looking for something to be angry about. But I also think there's a lot of ego and pride at stake there. But while I do think that there are some people guilty of that on the right, when it comes to the political agendas of the left and the right, it is absolute to me that the left is about communism and it's evil. So we may be both sides may have an issue in terms of not communicating effectively, but when it comes to a political agenda, one is evil and one isn't. But what are your thoughts on this topic, Sesame?
Yeah, I mean, on that note, it should be noted. I mean, there are plenty of people on both sides who could probably find a more productive way to disagree, to express complex ideas in a way that actually does benefit the rest of society. There is a way that our differences can sort of bring us together. And I do think a lot about the founding fathers on that one, because they were not – I mean, they shared some core values, and that's a big part of this as well, is the sort of values. Do we – I mean, the disagreement is great so long as we have those, and the founders did. So they were able to work through some pretty significant disagreements and conflicts, if you will, just through dialogue, which is very impressive.
Right. And if we are going, excuse me for jumping in, but I just had a thought. If we are going to, because right now sending the abortion issue back to D.C. where Lindsey Graham wants to take it to 15 weeks, which mm-hmm. preserves 95% of all abortions, mm-hmm. that's not a strategy if you're pro-life. The strategy needs to be at the state level, but we've got to learn how to communicate our pro-life message.
Yes, we do.
So we can win the hearts and minds.
100%. Because when you look at the truth, when you look at reality, there is only one moral position on this. Abortion is evil in all of its forms, and there's no relativism to be had here. It's not a classic case of, oh, well, it depends on the context or the culture. And that's what you get in modern, postmodern society, where we've completely torn apart God and therefore his created order and objective reality. And now we're just left in this weird place where everybody is just sort of left to themselves to determine what is good, what is wrong, and also what is true or false. Which is ridiculous. There are people out there that legitimately think Donald Trump stole the election of 2016 with the help of the Kremlin, and that is just verifiably untrue. It's false. Right. And what I will say is the big stalemate that I don't really know how to work with at this point in my life is that there is a sort of failure to meet in the middle, where there is a difference between facts and opinion and speculation and yes. perspective. And that's something that I think really needs to – we need to get clear here. For example, with abortion, life begins at conception. We need to get better at the science of that and explaining it to people in a way that's easy to understand. We need to get better with the imagery and using personal stories to explain and show people the light. I mean, it's like the allegory of the cave. There is only one light. There is only one truth. There's one reality. We just have to bring the people out of the cave into the light and to show them in a way that completely changes their paradigm. But if you do that, then it comes from the inside. Ideally, you help them to see what is true. Instead of telling them they're wrong, put them in the possession of what is true, and they will change their minds on their own. It's like Sun Tzu. You're fighting your enemy. When defeat is declared, give them a golden bridge to walk back across. Don't humiliate them. Don't shame them. Don't dunk on people to try to score political points. If we really care about the issues and about the moral principles, then we need to make it about that. Don't lose the sniping. It's like the Candace Owens, Ben Shapiro stuff. You can have disagreements about Israel, but make it about the issues. Don't make it about your personal beef or your pride or your ego or money. Make it about the issues. That is where Republicans really need to stay. And I think that that's a big problem you see on the left, and we shouldn't repeat it. We don't need to recreate that. The left, if they don't like you and they don't have any arguments against you, they just say you're a racist or you're a transphobe or we shouldn't listen to you because you're a white man or whatever, blah, blah, blah. We shouldn't do that on the right. And I don't think in large part we do, but there is some personal stuff that gets in the way of actually communicating those messages effectively in a way that it will be heard. We have to make it easier for people to want to listen to us. And that's a big thing. And I think the right focuses a lot on getting the facts right, and that's true. And now the opportunity for growth is delivering those messages to people in a way that makes them want to hear you. Do it with some charm and some intrigue and sincerity instead of dunking on people for their ignorance. Instead of slamming the libs for being ignorant about issues, that's an opportunity.
He's right that we are all addicted to conflict, and a lot of that has to do with social media. It's so easy to be a keyboard warrior and just fly off at the handle. And, you know, we've lost a lot of our culture in terms of proper. We've become very coarse as a society, and that includes both sides. All right, shifting gears. There's a story out today that struck. There was two food stories that struck me today. There's been this thing going around where I think it started with an ice cream sandwich, that somebody bought an ice cream sandwich from Walmart and it left it out overnight, and the thing never defrosted, never melted. Now apparently the same thing has happened with a, I think it's a drumstick. You know, the mm-hmm.
It's
I'm
like
not
a cone
a big ice cream.
With the yes, it's got the nuts on it, or like chocolate. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some there's multiple videos out now that drumsticks were left out. 24 hours later, it's not melted. What? Not melted. What is it going on in our food supply? Then on top of it, Daily Mail has an article out today, a story out that people, it has been, a study's been done, and people who eat this Beyond Meat business and this plant-based, you know, burgers and hot dogs are in worse shape medically and have more health issues than people eating natural burgers. People need, we have been so sold a bunch of hooey about what's healthy to eat and what's not healthy to eat. Look, the Lord provided, he put us at the top of the food chain, and he created a universe of here on earth with everything that we need for sustenance, including a brain that allowed us to be able to intelligently go around, gather up the food that we needed. And if you understand the food chain, you understand that chickens, cows, all the rest were provided by God. It's part of a, part of the brilliant universe for us to be able to as those at the top of the food chain to survive and thrive. Okay. Look, if you want to eat, look, I got a sweet tooth, but I don't eat all this processed crap. If I'm going to eat something yummy and something sweet, I want like a homemade slice of cake. Okay. Like the coconut cake that I brought into the station. Look, we got, and then you got to limit it. You got to limit it. Stop eating so much processed foods, because the government has complete, they got crickets in it. They have convinced the American people that palm oils and or seed oils were what are healthy for you, and they're not. And it's all part of a scheme to manufacture health issues with us so they can make money off of big pharma. And I've been, and I've been a victim of it as much as anybody, relying too much on, for too many years on over-the-counter sinus pills and Z-Packs when I would get sinus infections. And although growing up in the South, we were really all about natural remedies. We were all about the castor oil. Did we talk about this? Did I ask you if you ever took castor oil?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I hadn't heard of it.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, if you've ever had to take the castor oil, it was miserable going down, but it took care of things, okay? And now I'm so excited. I got to tell you, I'm so blessed and grateful that when I was struggling with some issues in November, a friend of mine, Scotty Sachs, gave me a sample of the Nanosoma spray, and it changed my life. It changed my life. It boosts your immunity by restoring, giving you the polycosanols that have taken out of our food supply. Go to iwantmyhealthback.com/AK, get some Nanosoma spray. Stop eating. I'm not telling people not to eat food out of the grocery store, but if you're going to buy ice cream, read the ingredients. And there's just good ice cream out there, isn't there, Sesame?
Oh, yeah, lots of it. You can find a, there's a lot out there. You just got to do your research and just be careful. Just be careful.
Read the label. You know, it should have what, milk and sugar in it?
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. Final segment of tonight's Andrea Kay Show. Come on back.
Andrea Kay, telling you like it is, while eating a donut, too. It's the Andrea Kay Show on The Answer San Diego.
Welcome back to tonight's Andrea Kay Show. Final segment here. Y'all need a little good news. I got some good news for y'all here in San Diego County, at least if you lived here. San Diego County residents, we're coming up, today's April, what, 11th? And typically the tax deadline would be the 15th, right? Well, a lot of people don't know that San Diego County was given until June 17th to file their taxes, because it applies to all San Diego County residents, whether or not they were impacted by the flooding. This is because I don't know if y'all remember how bad the flooding was in January. In fact, I know somebody whose kid's school in, I think it was Lemon Grove area, was completely destroyed. And they've got like, it's going to be at least another 6 months before the school is rebuilt, and the kids had to be homeschooled for a little bit. Now they're back in a different building. It was a little Catholic school that was destroyed. So the IRS has given everybody until June 17th to file their taxes. And that includes California as well, because they typically follow the Franchise Tax Board, according to this, according to CBS 8 here in San Diego. And I actually went onto the IRS website and verified this. You have until June 17th for your taxes. If you're going to want an extension beyond June 17th, you need to discuss that with the IRS, and they will be open this Saturday, April 13th from 9 a.m. to 4 at their office on Front Street in downtown San Diego. So that's it. So good news for those that need a little, that weren't going to be able to, or struggling or thinking they weren't going to be able to get it done by the 15th. So, all right, that's my little piece of good news. Something else is brewing in San Diego. You may think of this as good news or bad. I don't know. But there's conversations or potential for the Del Mar Fairgrounds to end up being low-cost housing. What would your thoughts be on that, Sesame Broccolini? Is that good news or bad news?
Oh, it's terrible news. That would be devastating. The Del Mar Fairgrounds, gosh, I mean, I've been lucky enough and fortunate enough to call Del Mar home. That is just such an iconic place with so many cool things that happen there. It would just be devastating. And I resent this policy, this whole philosophy that instead of trying to lower the cost of housing and building in open places east in Eastern County, like instead of addressing the root problems of why the cost of housing has skyrocketed in this county in the last 20 years, they would rather just keep going with their ridiculous spending, with their ridiculous taxation, and then completely bulldoze what is left of the most iconic parts of this city to put up quote-unquote low-income housing. It's like putting a Band-Aid on a head wound while also taking away one of the coolest things to do and see and one of the coolest places to be in San Diego. Stop punishing all of us for your terrible policy decisions. That is ridiculous.
It's not just the San Diego County Fair. It's also all kinds of events.
It's a part of the community. It's a part of the It's a part of the fabric of who we are as San Diegans. It's ridiculous to think that we would lose one of the crown jewels, one of the precious things we have here that makes this city iconic just because a bunch of Democrats are running this place into the ground and it's getting too expensive to live here. That is ridiculous. Exactly. You don't get to take away my life because you screwed up. No way.
So we're going to continue to look at this brewing story. Because we might have to get really vocal if we want to preserve one of the greatest parts of San Diego. To think that they would try to turn that into, you know, housing development is inexcusable, absolutely inexcusable. How about you offer, you know, there's a lot of things that they can do. I started to say, how about you offer? There's some huge lots of lands in Rancho Santa Fe. That's sitting unused, or maybe buy somebody's big property out there, and have that developed, you know. But it's an anti-cultural move here. It's not about pro-housing and pro-helping anybody. It's an anti-cultural move. Mm-hmm. All right, tomorrow's Friday fun day. We're going to have more fun topics for you guys here over the week and stink of the week. Email me, andreakshow.com. If you miss any part of the show, download the podcast. We love you so much, and we can't wait to chat with you tomorrow.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.